It's pretty easy, in my opinion, to focus on the big stuff around us as far as potential topics for this program. I mean, who doesn't want to hear about things like brown bears, moose, or kings? All very cool critters that command a great deal of attention, for various reasons for most folks. But one of the really terrific things, as I've alluded to before, about Togiak Refuge and our area is the diversity of wildlife we share this corner of the state with. Yeah, there's a lot of big stuff out there, from wolf packs to walrus herds. There's also a lot of wildlife that's much smaller in size. Things like voles, redpolls, and mining bees, and no, they don't have anything to do with pebble. So there's a lot of small stuff out there, and for some of it, we tend to notice it more in the summer. I'm talking about the various vicious insects such as mosquitoes, no-see-ums, and white sox. But today, I'd like to focus on small forms of life that do actually render a very positive service for the good of all. I'm talking about those species that serve as pollinators. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Pollinators and pollination. So, how much do you remember from elementary school science? Pollination is the transfer of pollen from the male part of the plant, the stamen, to the female part, the stigma, of the same or another flower. This results in fertilization, which in turn results in the production of fruits and seeds. In many cases, though not always, this is accomplished through the use of other organisms, called pollinators. Animals visit flowers in search of food, and sometimes even mates, shelter, and nest-building materials. Some animals intentionally collect pollen, while others simply move pollen incidentally in the course of feeding or other tasks. All of these animals are considered pollinators. I'd be willing to guess that for most of us, pollination conjures up thoughts of butterflies or bees, and those organisms can certainly be a part of the equation. Pollinators are an important topic for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and next week is National Pollinator Week, so today I'd like to provide a focus on pollinators. Also, at the end of today's episode, I'd like to share briefly about another topic that has become very dear to my heart. Pollination can actually happen in many forms. For example, there's abiotic pollination, which is pollination that occurs without the involvement of other organisms. This happens to be a minority method, whereas only 10% of flowering plants are pollinated in this way. The most common form of abiotic pollination, something along the lines of 98%, is anemophily, which is the textbook term for pollination by wind. Many types of grasses, most conifers, and a number of deciduous trees are pollinated in this way. The other form is biotic pollination, which is pollination requiring the intervention of other types of organisms. These organisms carry or move pollen grains from one plant to another. There are approximately 200,000 varieties of animal pollinators in the wild, the vast majority of which are, well, think about it for a moment and you'll guess, insects. Pollination by insects also carries with it a textbook name, entomophily. Entomophily is likely what most of us remember from third grade science, even if we didn't know what the name of the process was at the time. Entomophily often occurs on plants that have colored petals and a strong scent to attract all manner of insects, including those butterflies and bees, but also wasps, beetles, ants, moths, and flies. Evidence of insect pollination dates back to the days of the dinosaurs. But it's not just the insects that have a stranglehold on assisting with pollination. There's also zoophily, the term for pollination performed by vertebrates, particularly birds and bats. My guess is the one that comes to mind for most folks is the image of a hummingbird hovering in the air over a flower. Colors and smells come into play here. Plants adapted to using bats as pollinators normally have white petals and a strong scent. Plants that make use of birds as pollinators are more likely to have red petals and little to no scent. For what it's worth, very few birds make use of the sense of smell to find plant-based food sources. Why does the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service get all geeked up about pollinators? Because pollinators, though many are small enough to seem insignificant, are subject to the same types of environmental changes as larger critters, such as polar bears, to name one species. I don't mean to say that the same things are threats to both, but both are subject to factors that affect populations. And that can be a bad thing. For example, a recent study of the status of pollinators in North America by the National Academy of Sciences found that populations of honeybees and other types of wild pollinators are declining. Declines in wild pollinators may be a result of habitat loss and degradation, or other factors could also be at play, such as introduced parasites and pathogens. The bottom line is to keep a watchful eye on pollinator numbers while trying to better understand just what can be done to bolster numbers when they show signs of sagging. The bigger part of this for you and me is probably just having a greater level of awareness. I'll confess, I'm probably like most people. I pay attention to issues that affect things like caribou or moose numbers. I mean, after all, those are freezer-worthy topics and therefore important. But don't really give any thought to things like berries and what's affecting their success. There are some things, active steps, that people can take, such as planting pollinator gardens or working to try and be more educated about herbicides and pesticides. But the biggest thing is awareness, hence the existence of a National Pollinator Week. Many of the plant types we derive enjoyment and or sustenance from depend on pollinators. For what it's worth, Alaska has at least 95 bee species and 75 butterfly species that are pollinators in our state. So the next time a bee gets trapped in your house, rather than panic and reach for the fly swatter, show it the door instead. And be glad it and others are out there doing what they do when it comes to our plants. That second topic I mentioned, in saying it was dear to my heart, well, that was something of a play on words, and was brought to my attention this week by Dr. Kathy Heineman of Dillingham. Thanks, Kathy. Specifically, I had asked about a health issue and had mentioned to her that I've been able to find some consistency with exercise of late. She congratulated me on it and asked, "Any way you can add that to field notes and encourage some others to exercise?" Absolutely. And consider it done. Now, I recognize that many of you do quite well with exercise. For example, the bike path here in Dillingham is absolutely abuzz. A bit of pollinator humor there. With people, pretty much all the time. Particularly in the evenings and on weekends. People are walking and biking and really taking advantage of the fact that Dillingham has a nice paved bike path available. But I also know that there's a lot of folks, myself included, that aren't maybe as regular as we should be when it comes to getting exercise. Combined with poor eating habits, and we're right there with the rest of America, minus the fast food restaurants, in being a bit more obese and a tad more out of shape than we should be and know we ought to be. As such, at Kathy's request, I thought I'd take a moment to encourage everyone to make the time, on something of a regular basis, to get out and get your heart rate up a bit, in whatever form that might take. I often encourage people to get outside and do stuff, possibly to the point of ad nauseum, but I do so for two very important reasons. I firmly believe it's a big part of my job to do so, and also because I'm a true believer, apart from my job, in the benefits of time spent outside in nature. Let me explain for just a moment why I said that this topic was dear to my heart and that it was a play on words. I don't think I've talked about this on a prior episode, but if for some reason you've heard it, please indulge me. Back in the early months of 2012, I started to have some pains in my chest. I'm 46, overweight, don't exercise enough, and come from a family with a history of heart problems. So the signs weren't exactly pointing in the right direction. In Anchorage, a blockage was discovered, and on Easter morning last year, I had an angioplasty performed and a stent installed. The blocked artery was declared 100% blocked, if you can believe that. Funny thing is, my cardiologist does not believe the pain I was feeling was because of the blockage, but rather anxiety about a possible blockage. In any event, it served as a red flag to get things checked out and fixed. In the aftermath of that, I have made some life changes, or tried to, including dietary changes and an effort at more regular exercise. Exercise is the part of the equation that I have of late achieved some consistency at. Walking was recommended, and I do walk more than I used to, but I gotta confess, walking's never been something I enjoyed, well, unless it was to get to a really great hunting or fishing location. What I do enjoy is playing basketball and activities related to that. It gets my heart rate up to where it needs to be, and I thoroughly relish every minute of it, because in addition to doing something good for me, I'm also having a good time. In saying I've become more regular, I've been able to be very consistent for the past 6 weeks, and I can certainly feel a difference. I haven't lost as much weight as I would like, but I'm still nearly 30 pounds under where I was last year, so I'm headed in the right direction. In closing today, my encouragement to you would be to make sure that you exercise regularly. It's not always easy to find time, but you'll be much better off for it. Some of you are already on the bandwagon and have been for a very long time, and I'm extremely happy for you. But many of us aren't and need to be. I'm certainly right there with a lot of you. In fact, in the words of that venerable genius Red Green, remember, I'm pulling for you. We're all in this together. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.